All right, so we're talking about emotional terrorism. Here's my hope. My hope is that I'm actually wrapping this class up. I know I said that last week, but here we are, and I'm still trying to wrap this class up. So we're going to see how well it goes. Let's just do a quick review here. What is emotional terrorism? If we're talking about in that context, what does emotional terrorism mean? Jesse? Using their emotions? What about using your emotions? Can you use your emotions to try to control somebody else? How can you do that? Ooh, the guilt trip. We talked about a couple of these last week. The guilt trip is one. What's another one? Caleb? Throwing a fit? Yeah? When we say throwing a fit, we picture the two-year-old tantrum on the floor, right, in the middle of Walmart. God bless those parents. We've all been there. But what would be some other mechanisms of throwing a fit? How would a grown-up throw a fit? What'd you say, Ashley? Oh, like a bad protest. Yeah, I could see. I could see that. Somebody else was saying something over here. I missed it. Slamming a door is kind of throwing a fit. Yeah, because, you know, if you're a man, okay, if you're a full-grown man has the capacity to slam a door and tear the hinges off the wall, right? You know, because God made men strong. It's kind of how it works. But if you do that, what are you doing to the rest of the room? You're silencing them, right? You're attempting to silence the room by a demonstration of your force, okay? Now, maybe you don't have that fully planned out in your head when you do it, but that's functionally what's happening. That's a type of emotional terrorism. That's good. Can y'all think of any other mechanisms through which we use our emotions to control others?
The silent treatment,
yeah. Yeah, I think the silent treatment.
No, I just don't want to talk right now. I don't want to do, no, leave me alone.
Or you just, what's wrong, honey? Nothing. Okay. Is nothing wrong? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Are you okay? I'm fine. No, I don't. I heard what your words said, but I also heard what your mouth said, and your mouth did not say you're fine. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, emotional terrorism, silent treatment, or the lie, where now you're just like, man, I'm walking on eggshells. And that's really the kind of environment that kind of stuff creates, right? If you have an emotional terrorist that's trying to control the room via fear or via many types of manipulation, you really are creating an environment where everybody is kind of walking on eggshells the whole time, right? They're scared to say something, they're scared to do something because they're going to push somebody too far, and you can't thrive in that environment. Like, your family's not going to thrive, you're not going to thrive, your kids aren't going to thrive, your friends aren't going to thrive. They're going to, in fact, go to your house and feel nervous the whole time and wonder when they can leave, if they come to your house at all. You invite people to your home and they're like, oh, I can't, I'm, washing my hair. Yeah, I'm busy that night. What about the next night? Busy. Next one, still busy. Yeah, okay, you know, there might be something going on there. Yeah, okay, great. Can you think of any other types of emotional terrorism? Just real quick, I just want to review. Remember, we talked about a couple of specific ones last week. There's one really specific one that's very prevalent in our area. It was the what? Do you remember? What's that? Shaming is common. I would put that kind of under the guilt category. But because shame is not always bad, Andrew. Shame's not always bad. The Bible tells us that shame sometimes is good. It's good for us. It's good for us to feel ashamed of our sin, right? And there's a little bit of shame, you know, that you wield as a parent, that you wield as a leader to help your people. Now, you're not like shoving their face in it and wallowing it around, but a little bit of shame is helpful. It keeps you away from sin. It helps keep others away from sin. That's a good thing. So there's a little bit of guilt, a little bit of shame that can be wielded well. Over manipulation of it is the problem, right? That's where we get into issues. But one of the real common ones we talked about, just to review, wrap up this review, is the God told me manipulation. Remember that? Well, God told me. Y'all remember that? Now, what's the problem with the God told me moment? The God told me move. What does that do? You can't, what's my, well, he didn't tell me, you know, like, that's about as far as you can go. I mean, okay, God told you. I don't think he told me that. I remember one time, I heard a story about somebody who walked up to a young lady and said to the young lady, "Hey, God told me that I'm going to marry you." And the young lady's response, this is the proper young lady response. This is good. The response is, "Well, he did not tell me that." Okay? That's the correct answer to a situation like that. "Well, God told me." Okay. Well, that's great, but he did not tell me that. I've had conversations with that similar to that inside of this church, not about people trying to marry me. But more specifically in the lines of, "God told me we need to do this," whatever it is, this random ministry thing. And my response has to be, "Well, he did not tell me that. So we're going to figure out what's next." We can't allow ourselves to be terrorized and manipulated in such ways that we lose course for the mission. And we don't want to see that do that. All right. So we have seen a few examples of how emotional terrorism comes up in our families, in our organizations, in our relationships, all those different kinds of pieces. So what I wanted to do today, I want to give us some mechanisms to help us fight emotional terrorism. Jesse, could you go pull that preamp down a little bit? I'm getting a lot of ring in my speaker.
I'm thinking it's that, actually. The stamp.
Hello? Hello? Fascinating. Well, could you please pull it down a smidge and push the slider up a smidge so that I'm not ring-a-ding-ding-dinging? That'd be super helpful. All right, so what I want to talk about today is giving us the skills, the ability to be able to prevent emotional terrorism inside of our families, inside of the organizations that we lead, inside of ourselves and our networks and our friends. And so I want to run through a few biblical principles with you that are going to help you fight this. Now, full disclosure, as I told you at the beginning of this section of the class on emotions, I am pulling the vast majority of this from Joe Rigney's book, Emotional Sabotage, okay? Leadership and Emotional Sabotage. And I would encourage you to read it. I really would. I think it's a good book for you to kind of take a look at. But this section specifically, I think I'm pulling almost straight out of chapter 3. So if you go home after this and read chapter 3, you'll be doing better off than anybody else. So feel special about that. So anyway, here's the first principle. The first principle is honor your father and your mother. This is one of the main mechanisms to help us avoid being terrorized, honoring your father and your mother. Now, if you go read the Westminster Confession of Faith, you'll actually see that the divines drew the conclusion from honoring your father and mother into all types of organizational structures that involve leaders, okay? They were saying, basically, hey, there's all kinds of things for us to think about and say, ah, yes, there's a leader involved here. We should point honor towards them. Now, can you think of any ways, specifically, that that's going to help us shore up against emotional terrorism? Can you think of any ways? By honoring your leaders. Any ideas? Let's go through it. Let's go through it real quick. So, now, the Bible, if you think about the Bible, how many times are body metaphors involved in the Bible? Body metaphors. Yeah, body metaphors. Come on. Can you think of a time in the Bible where there is a body metaphor? Oh, yes. Let me be more specific. The body and the head metaphor. Can you think of things like that? So yes, bridle the tongue is a good illustration. That's true. But that's a little bit more specific. Body metaphors in the sense of your body operates by the control of your head, right? There's a head and then there's the body. We see that illustration come throughout. In fact, in marriage, we see two fleshes become what?
One.
Okay. So we see there's all kinds of places in the Bible that talks about this metaphor of the body, and the husband, father, leader, is the head of each particular body. And we get that from who? Jesus, who is the head of the church. Okay, we got it. Now, the head and the body are dependent upon each other, okay? So the head doesn't function without the body, and the body doesn't function without the head. We don't want to get this idea that the body exists to serve the head. The only people who think that way are tyrannical rulers in tyrannical organizations, and those don't last very long, okay? If you have a family run by a tyrant, as soon as the kids are old enough, what do? They're out. They ain't sticking around. They don't want to be a part of that. If you have a business that's run by a tyrant who believes the whole business is just there to serve them, what happens to that business? It's going to fail. Why? Because all the resources are just being sent to him. He's not trying to steward it in a way that's going to help provide for the rest of the people of the organization. Same thing with the government. If there's a government that, and it's run by a tyrant, what's going to happen to that nation? Eventually it flips. It's not going to last much longer. Now, sometimes those nations don't care, or sorry, sometimes the governments and the tyrants don't care because they're just trying to suck everything out of it as fast as they possibly can and then move on once the fire starts. That's true, okay? That's true. When you get into the world of like the billion trillionaires, they don't mind bleeding a country dry, a nation dry, a people dry, in order to just move on to the next thing, to put as much in their pocket as they possibly can. That is a thing that actually goes on. So head and body are interdependent upon each other. They need each other in order to function properly. Now, every body, this is important, okay? Every body has a mission. You get what I'm saying? If you start a business and its job is to, I don't know, manufacture toilet paper, okay? What's the purpose of that business? To make toilet paper, right? That body has a mission, okay? It meets a need. It meets a very important need, right? That everybody has. That mission gets threatened when what? You have a ruler, a head, that is disconnected from the body and therefore that mission. Now, that head is not really caring so much about the purpose of the organization as much as he cares about or she cares about getting as much out of it as they possibly can. You see how that's a danger? Okay? You see how that can become a threat? Everybody has a mission. What's the mission of the church? What's the mission of the church? To go and preach the gospel. Specifically, Matthew 28, 18 through 20. Go, therefore, and teach, right? Teach all that I have commanded you, baptizing the nations, discipling the nations, discipling all peoples, and I will be with you to the end of the age. There's a particular mission. What is the mission of the family? To raise children for the Lord. Where do we get that from? What's that? It's in Malachi, but it's stated earlier too. At the very beginning, that's right. What specifically was the mission of the family, and when was it given? Do you guys remember? Be fruitful, multiply, and do what? That's the mission of the family. Fill the earth, subdue it, take dominion. Okay, that's the fundamental biblical mission of the family. Subdue it and take dominion. Now, the job of the head is to make sure that the body is operating according to its mission, okay? And the job of the head is to instruct and teach and bring that mission into a fruitful operation. That's the head's job, okay? That's the head's job. Every family, every business, every nation has a mission. The problem enters in whenever many of us just don't know what it is. Now, let me try to clarify this a little bit more. Every family, every organization, every nation has a mission. The problem comes in when we don't know what it is. Because here's the deal. You have one, even if you don't know what it is. And that's the most dangerous kind of mission to have. Do y'all understand what I'm saying? If you don't know what your organization, family, team, nation's mission is, you've got one. You just don't know it, okay? And that's incredibly, incredibly dangerous. A vacuum of leadership creates problems in every family, every organization, in every area of your life in which you hold responsibility over other people, okay? And the leader's job, the head's job, is to state the mission clearly and get all the facets of that organization moving in the direction of that mission. Okay? And this is where we're going to get in trouble because some people are like, Pastor Stewart, are you talking about us creating mission statements? That's not what I'm talking about. Although I think some things like that can be helpful, but 95% of the time it's really just confusing. You've already got one. God's given it to you. Now you should do it. Okay? Let's try to get specific here. Having a head and having a mission, meaning that the head's job is to accomplish that mission, and he equips the body, okay, to do so. Are y'all following with me here? Because here's the deal. If you have a body that knows what it's supposed to do and is shored up by the mission that God has given it, then you are far less likely to become victims to the emotional terrorists because you know what you're supposed to do. Do you get it? You know what the mission is. You know what God's called you to do. You know the directions that he's pointed you in, and you are far less likely to let the terrorists come in and change your course because you're secure in knowing what God has called you to do. Does that make sense, you guys? If you've got your mission, okay, then the folks who come in and try to control what you do by their feelings and try to change that mission can't. They can't do it because you can sit in confidence and say, no, I know what God's called me to. He has called me to reach this particular people with the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I am not wavering. But then whenever the people come in and they say, oh, but we really need to devote our resources to minister to those people in poverty in the area. We've got to spend all our resources in that mission. And the people who are in the seat can say, no, that's not what we do. Our mission by God is to impact this area and win it for the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is not to start another 501c3. Do y'all get what I'm saying? This is not what we're here for. We are here to obey the Lord in this particular calling. The head organizes the body towards its purpose. Y'all understand what I'm saying? The head, and listen, if you are responsible for anyone, this is your job, okay? So let's say, okay, let's use the toilet paper factory analogy, okay? You got a toilet paper factory. Now there's tiers of employees and managers and all kinds of stuff in order to be able to manufacture these products. The overall goal of the whole organization is to do what? To manufacture? But inside of that, there's going to be quality control, okay? And the guy who leads quality control, what's his job going to be? Making sure that it's not too rough or whatever else. Making sure that the standards of the product are high, okay? And then you're going to have the guy over here who's responsible for sourcing the proper trees. Because if he gets the wrong trees to make the paper, the texture is going to be wrong, and then it's not going to ship correctly, okay? And then you got the guy over here whose whole job is just the little cardboard tube in the middle. And if the cardboard tube's not strong, everything falls apart, and it's just going to turn into a toilet paper lump and not a roll. You see what I'm saying? Like, even inside of the overall mission, you have specific missions. Y'all tracking? Inside of the overall mission, you have specific missions. And if your body, the people that you're responsible for, whoever they may be, are shored up in knowing what that mission is, then it can't be tossed to the side by the emotional terrorists. And if there is a mission vacuum, a leadership vacuum inside of any of the organizations or inside of any of the responsibilities that you have, somebody else, anybody else, is going to try to put a different mission in place. And we've seen that happen. This church is 10 years old, and it's probably happened 4 or 5 times where other folks have decided that they have a better mission for us. And they'll come in, and I don't think necessarily that they're all evil and poorly intentioned. I think they're well-intentioned, generally, people who are probably trying to help. Sometimes it's emotional terrorists, but not all the time. And they try to move the mission of the organization in a different direction. And the responsibility of the leadership is to say, hey, no, we know what our mission is. This is where we're going. We're not moving. We're not changing in a different direction. Now, why does that really matter? Why does that really matter? Why do you have to maintain course? To accomplish the goals. That's right. Well, what happens if you change your organizational mission every year? You don't do anything, right? See, real fruit comes from a long obedience. I'm stealing this from someone else, in the same direction. That's where real fruitfulness comes in. And I was talking to a guy who does financial and legal consulting this past week. He went as far to say that you don't see real fruit until you're four generations in. Can you imagine that? We don't think farther than like 2 months. But his point was real, like strong fruitfulness, you see that four generations in. And the people that I know and really respect that are doing now what I would aspire to do one day, it's because they're four generations in. It's because they've been doing it since their great-grandfather was on the scene. Do you get what I'm saying? This is where we have to go as a people. We have to say, hey, here's the mission that Jesus has given us. This is the direction that we're plowing in. Therefore, let's put our heads down and go. Do y'all understand? This is how you stop the emotional terrorists, or one of the mechanisms. I'm going to give you some more. But this is one of the major mechanisms through which you stop the emotional terrorists from taking control of your organization. If you are shored up and confident in the mission that God has given you, then you can't be blown off course. Do you understand? Now, your mission has to actually be the mission that God has given you. And how do we know what the mission is that God has given you? The Bible, right? You do what it says. The fundamental mission of the family is to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and subdue it. Right? The fundamental mission of the church is a derivation and an exponential restatement of that, which is now take that and do it with the nations. Right? That's the fundamental mission of the church. The fundamental mission of any business is to provide a product or a service to the glory of God. Right? We work as unto the Lord. That's the fundamental mission of any business. The fundamental mission of any nation is to restrain the evildoers. So the Bible tells us in Romans chapter 13 and Genesis chapter 10, I think it is, our job as a nation is to restrain evil that good may flourish. And if we're not doing that, do you see what I'm saying? Let me ask you, here's a fun question. You want to talk about leadership vacuum. What's the mission of the United States? Fund the Ukraine. But did you realize what just happened? I said, what's the mission of this nation? And you know what happened? Nobody knows. Now you see how easily elections are lost and won and steered in different directions? Because we don't even know what we're supposed to be doing. It's interesting, isn't it? Now let's draw that closer home. What's the mission of your family? You don't have to say it out loud. But my wager would be that many of us are sitting here in the same stance and saying, I'm not sure. But here's my point. America has a mission. We just don't know what it is. Your families do too. You just don't know what they are. But you've got one. Your mission might just be keep the kids from crying. That might be your mission. Your mission might be make sure mama's happy. Make sure daddy's happy. That might be your mission. Your mission might be save as much money as possible. But all those missions right there, those aren't real because none of them are based on the biblical calling of what a family, a church, Christians are called to do. They're not going to work. Y'all tracking? I don't remember where I was. I think it was in one of my trips when I had a couple of hours and I could just sit and think, which was just wonderful. But I was like worked through pages and pages in my notebook because I was trying to figure out like, what is the Amidon mission? What are we doing? What are we trying to do? How does this work? There's got to be one somewhere. And what I eventually landed on was believing that we are called to the city of Opelousas, we endeavor to expand and build the kingdom of Christ in any way he gives us opportunity. Amidon mission. That's a big one. but what I'm saying is we're here to advance the kingdom of Christ. And we believe that our family is called multi-generationally to this place. Do you see how we've got two very important criterion to advancing the cause of Christ right there in that statement? We think we're called here because the Lord has made that abundantly clear, and I could tell you that story another time. But we believe the Lord's called us here for a multi-generational endeavor to advance the kingdom of Christ in any and every opportunity that he gives us, which is partly why I'm kind of a serial starter, which is why I try to start a bunch of things all the time. Because one of the things I'm also thinking is, like, I'm trying to start all these things. Maybe something would be for one of my kids, and they could kind of take it and run with it whenever the time comes. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we could get this fully going, and then one of my kids can get in the seat and run with it farther, and we can get this going, and one of my kids could get in the seat, and they could run with it farther. You know, like, there's a mission here. There's a vision here. Do y'all get what I'm going after? And so it takes work to figure this out, but it has to be seated in the biblical mission of the family, and it has to be seated in the biblical mission of the church in order for it to make sense, in order for it to track. And then once you have it, you lock it in, and you say, this is what we're here to do. We're not moving. We're not wavering. We're not going to let the emotional terrorists tear us down and distract us. Now, ahead not only keeps the organization, the body, oriented towards its purpose, ahead also maintains the borders. Now here's ironic in the election that we're in right now, but it's true. Ahead's job is to maintain the borders. Now here's what I mean by that. A body can't care for itself if it devotes all of its resources somewhere else. I know. I'm not attempting to do an election commentary right now, but it does just lend itself to that, does it not? But a body cannot care for itself if it devotes all of its resources somewhere else. Okay? So the same principle applies to a family. Okay? If you have a family and the resources that come into your family, you immediately allocate out to maybe legitimate needs that exist outside of that family, you are sinning, okay? If the resources that are coming into your family, you immediately extend somewhere else to other things outside of that family, you are sinning. The Bible tells us that the primary responsibility of the head of a family is to provide for those inside of that family. That's the primary orientation. You have to keep those borders, okay? A man who does not provide for his own family is worse than a
infidel,
unbeliever. You know, pick your translation there. That's bad. So our job, our duty as God's people is to make sure that we are providing first and foremost inside of the borders that God has given us to provide for. Do y'all get that? So like a business owner looks around and makes sure that those inside of his sphere of influence are being cared for. A person who's governing a town makes sure first and foremost that the resources are being allocated inside of that town and not to send them on extravagant trips to conferences in other parts of the country so that they can, you get what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't need to riff on that anymore. Okay, great. The first responsibility of a husband is to see that his family is provided for. The first responsibility of a pastor is to see that his people are cared for. Okay? This is why a pastor is qualified or disqualified based on whether or not his household is in order. If he can't maintain the borders in his house, he cannot maintain the borders in the church. Now, where do we get that from? Where do we get the concept that a church's primary responsibility are to the members of that church? Where do we get that from? No, well, maybe. But I have a very specific text that I'm working out of Galatians 6. What does it say? Do all these things, but first to the household of faith. That's Galatians 6:10. 10. Wow, that was embarrassing. Galatians 6:10. Fathers, your responsibility is primarily your family. Pastors, your responsibility is primarily your church. Elders too. Elders, your responsibility is primarily your church. Are y'all tracking? There are tons of people who will try to hijack the mission of the church, who will try to hijack the mission of the family. And if you're not shored up in that, in keeping the borders, it is easy for you to get manipulated and kicked in the other direction. Very, very easy. Okay? And that emotional terrorism comes and rings. But if you know the mission, this is what God has called us to do. This is what God has called my family to do. This is what God has called this church to do. This is what God has therefore also, I would argue that businesses exist within the mission of the family, by the way, because that's the way that they're supposed to, like family household enterprises exist within the network of the family. That's the way that it's supposed to be, okay? I got a long explanation of that, but I really do believe that businesses exist within the context of the household and that we've lost that and we've created these mega corporations that now households operate in service to. We flipped it upside down, okay? And I think that structure is coming crumbling down and pretty quickly, but we'll have to talk more about that another time. Do y'all have questions about that? So a head orients the body towards its purpose, towards its mission, and a head maintains the borders. Do y'all have any questions about that? Great, okay, great. Now, what happens if we don't maintain the borders? What happens? The illegals come in. Or resources go out, right?
Yeah.
You start considering people part of your organization that actually aren't part of your body, aren't part of your organization, and you lose resources. Or you allocate the resources that God has given you to steward for particular people outside of those borders, right? Jesse?
I was reading a passage in Proverbs 5 yesterday where it talks about Israel, or just in general, you committing adultery and the consequences. Lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel ones, lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of the foreigner.
Yeah. See? Borders. That's the duty of a head. The duty of a head is to maintain the mission and maintain the borders of that mission. It's hard work, though. But you can see how if you don't have your mission defined, you don't have the hope of doing the borders thing. Right? Because you don't even know what you're supposed to do. So then somebody else shows up and emotionally terrorizes you a little bit, and then you say, well, maybe that is my mission, right? And you start allocating resources in the wrong direction. I just feel like you'll have questions, but you're not quite brave enough to ask them, and that's okay. I love you a lot.
What's going on right now?
I can even tell Jesse to delete your questions later if you want to. This is a safe place. That's okay. That's okay. You don't have to do that. So heads,
that we have to delete them.
Heads set the mission, maintain the borders, and the body then takes that mission and does what with it? This is actually really cool. Okay? So the body doesn't just serve the head. I'm not even going to have time to finish my notes today. I knew that was going to happen. The body doesn't just serve the head, right? Okay? The body doesn't just serve the head, but rather what the body does is it takes the mission and the resources that the head allocates, and it compounds it exponentially. That's how a business works. A business takes the mission and vision of the leader of that business and the talents that he brings into the organization, and then the business as a whole compounds those talents and resources and makes more with it, right? It's the same thing with a nation. A nation receives the mission and the vision of the leadership and then takes the resources that they acquire and then compounds that into goodness for them and for others. Y'all following with me? How does that work with a family? How does that work with a family? Multiplication. Oh, thank you, Andrew. Andrew was like, I know the answer. I'm a little nervous to say it, though. This is a safe place. Safe place. It's be fruitful and multiply. What does a man... Well, let's not get into a biology class here. But to become one flesh, the man sows his seed with the woman, and the woman takes the seed and does what? Produces life, children. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, this is the body metaphor compounded, pushed down, fruitful, running over, right? This is a beautiful picture. And not just in that, but the resources that, let's say the guy goes and gets a job and brings home some money, what does he do with that money? 95% of the time, he hands it to his wife, right? And he says, please turn this into as much rice and gravy as you can. Please. And then what does the wife do? She turns it into rice and gravy, but then she also turns it into beautifying the home, and she turns it into making the family a gospel witness to the world. You know, like, it's compounding exponentially. You give a man a bunch of money, and what does a man do with it? He either buys stupid things, or he never spends any of it and sleeps on a mattress on the floor. Like, that's the two options for a man, okay? There's no such thing, well, maybe very rarely, but I would argue that there's no such thing as a comfortable middle-class man by himself, okay? If he's alone, he's not looking to buy a house in a nice neighborhood. He doesn't care about school districts. He doesn't care about if the grass is cut or not. Give him a, you know, this is why barn dominiums exist. It's men's fault. Do y'all know what a barn dough is? Somebody got a great idea about building a metal shed, and they were like, I could put some sheetrock in here.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done. And you should blame the men for this. Because this is how dude operates. He goes and he works in the oil field. He comes back. He's like, I made $50,000 in 2 weeks. I'm going to make a barn dough, you know? And that's what they do. They live in barn dominiums. Anyway, the body compounds and produces a return based on the mission that the head gives it, and it creates this exponential effect over time. That's a properly well-oiled machine. And if you're missing the mission or the borders, you don't get to have that. You get it? If your organization or the people that you're responsible for or the church that you're a part of or the nation that you're a part of is missing those two pieces, the mission and the securing of the borders, then you don't get the fruit. Do you understand? This is a big deal. You don't get the fruit if you don't have that. But if you have families, let's just talk about the building blocks of society, which is the family. If you have families that have their mission and are compounding fruitfulness, okay, and they have new endeavors and they're producing and they're obeying the Lord and therefore they're blessed and they continue to increase in their production, then what happens to the church that those people go to? It grows. And it has, as a result, the church as a whole has more fruit. You see? So you have families who have the understanding of a multi-generational mission and they're committed to it and they do the work of that mission over time. The Lord blesses, fruitfulness increases over time, and then therefore the church as a whole is blessed, continues to grow, increases in fruitfulness over time, and then eventually what happens? You win the town. You win the town because you've had 70 years to do it. And when everybody else in the city of Opelousas is believing and loving that big stupid mural on 190, that's the mission of Opelousas. Oh, man. Leave this on the internet. That's the mission of Opelousas. You know the mural that I'm talking about on 190 on the side of a building? It's not where you come from. It's where you're going that matters. They're putting that up in the middle of the city. You know what they're saying? They're saying, kids, get out of here as fast as you possibly can. That's the mission of the city of Opelousas. Run for your lives. I told it to a buddy of mine, and I was like, wait till you see this mural. And he looked at me. He was like, did they say the quiet part out loud? And I said, yes, they said the quiet part out loud. It's exactly what happened. But if you have Christians and a church that are committed to a multi-generational mission in an area and building the kingdom of Christ over the course of time, if you've built the borders and set the mission, what happens? You win the town. And if you have enough towns, one, you win the state. And if you have enough states, one, you win the nation. It's not that far. 70 years ain't that long, honestly. Every one of us, well, not every one of us, but likely most of us will get close to seeing that. And your kids definitely will. It's not that far. But that's how it's done. You have to set the mission to stop the terrorists, and you have to keep the borders. Okay, Jesse?
If the Romans have a mural that says abandon your children in the streets, the duty of Christians should be to pick them up and raise them. So if everybody's just up and leaving Opelousas, who's the only ones left?
It's us. Yeah, if everybody's running out of Opelousas, that's right. Well, see, that's how it works. Everybody else wants to leave except the Christians. Yikes. The only way they're going to drive me out of here is with a gun, which could happen.
Yeah.
Do y'all have any questions about this? You see how important this kind of stuff is? If you want to stop the terrorists, set the mission, keep the borders. You have to. If you don't do those two things, you're not going to stop them. You're not going to be able to resist them. That's what happened in 2020. I know I keep going back and referencing this, but that's absolutely true. The emotional terrorists got access to the church that had no mission, and took control. And they set the church in a completely different direction. Okay? But if you know that the church knows its mission, all of Christ and all of life for all of Acadiana. You see, even our church mission is local. Right? All of Christ and all of life for all of Acadiana. These are our people right here. We have Opelousas, which is pointed towards Opelousas. We have Lafayette, that's pointed towards Lafayette. Hopefully we build out more churches over time. But this is our mission right here. And within that, we have multi-generational family missions moving in a particular direction. Imagine what that looks like in four generations. I know what it looks like. Omnia a Dei Gloriam. Do y'all know why I keep saying that? Does anybody know why I keep saying that? Omnia a Dei Gloriam. God, see, I always go too long. Omnia a Dei Gloriam is the city motto for the city of Opelousas. It is on the seal. It is written down as the motto. It is incorporated into the foundational DNA of the city that you live in. Omnia a Dei Gloriam. And it means all things to the glory of God. Everything. Omnia, everything. A day to God, Gloriam, His glory. All I'm doing, I'm just trying to make their mission come true. That's all I'm doing. Yeah. Doesn't take long. Okay, questions? I got time for like one question and then we're out of here. Any questions? Cool. So here's your homework. Heads. Here's your homework, heads. Set the mission. Keep the borders. Set the mission first.